Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of what is behind the changing political attitudes in the country on gay marriage and immigration. Princeton historian Julian Zelizer joins us to discuss his latest article at CNN, Generation X and Y Start to Rule Politics. Then we will speak with the former U.S. ambassador and CIA station chief in South Korea, Donald Gregg, who argues that rather than the show of force with B-2 bombers and F-22 fighters, the White House should be pursuing diplomacy with North Korea and negotiating a peace treaty instead of escalating the dangerous confrontation on the peninsula that could lead to a catastrophic war. Donald Gregg has an article at the Los Angeles Times, Reaching Out to North Korea. Obama showed on his Middle East trip the power of direct presidential involvement. He should employ the same sort of diplomacy towards Pyongyang. Then finally, we'll look into the murders of prosecutors in Texas linked to the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas and discuss the growing power and reach of this prison gang involved in racketeering, meth labs, and murder. Mark Potok, the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project and editor of its quarterly investigative journal, Intelligence Report, and the Hate Watch blog, joins us to discuss what amounts to a declaration of war on law enforcement by the Aryan Brotherhood. Joining us now is Julian Zelizer, who is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN.com and Politico and has written for the New York Times and the Washington Post. His most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, Generations X and Y Start to Rule Politics. Welcome to Background Briefing, Julian Zelizer.
Thanks for having me.
And in your article, you argue that the two new generations of Americans who have entered into their adulthood now in their late 20s, 30s, and 40s, they're starting to become influential, and Generation X, that's the Americans born in the late 1960s through the late 1970s. They saw the end of the Cold War. And the millennial generation, Generation Y, born between the late 1970s and the early 1990s, they lived through the communications revolution. So is this if I could tie this in, Julian Zelizer, to the recent autopsy by the RNC on what happened to the Republicans in the last election and how they can fix what they can see as a growing problem with demographics and the young. Is this essentially the case that both attitudes on homosexuality and immigration, et cetera, with these younger generations now coming of political age, are a kind of gateway to other issues, and the Republicans are basically losing these generations unless they deal with these gateway issues?
For sure. I think they might risk being out of touch, not just with younger liberals or younger Democrats, who they're obviously not going to get, but even younger Republicans. I mean, there's evidence that on some issues like gay marriage or immigration, that the stand of the Republicans on Capitol Hill doesn't match where a lot of Republican voters are of this age group. This is a generation that grew up where gay relationships were common in their families and popular culture. They grew up in a pluralistic country defined by ways of immigration. I just don't think these are going to be winning issues over the long run for Republicans, even if in the short term it helps the party gain a little traction.
Well, recently I did some coverage on the fact that student debt has passed the $1 trillion mark, second only now to household mortgage debt, and it's tripled since 2005. So something extraordinary has happened to the economics and the future of this generation, particularly the millennials. Do you think that not only are they going to get more engaged in politics, they're going to get more active because, you know, these for-profit colleges are a massive ripoff. The idea that you indenture an entire generation, burden them down with debts, give them worthless diplomas and no job prospects, that's never happened before. That's cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes. I mean, I think there's two different pressures. So on the one hand, the X's and Y's, the generation X's and Y's have grown up in an era when students accumulate massive amounts of debt, when job prospects are not great. A lot of the jobs that are good are still transitory. They don't have the kind of security that manufacturing jobs once had in the 40s and 50s here in the United States. And the prospects of doing better than your parents are not great. And so they are growing up in an era where this generation, the 20s to 40s, are ripe for some kind of political engagement. On the other hand, both the X's and Y's have grown up in an era where politics doesn't seem to work, where polarization is so strong and the power of interest groups is so overwhelming that Washington always seems gridlocked. That is normal for them. They don't have a yesteryear where politics seemed to work. And so those are two different pressures. On the one hand, there's reasons to become engaged in politics because of economics. On the other hand, many of them are disillusioned that politics can ever work. They've never seen that really happen.
Again, I'm speaking with Julian Zelizer, the professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He has an article at CNN, Generation X and Y Start to Rule Politics. So the fact that you have on the Republican side, the young people, particularly those evident at the recent CPAC conference, were largely the young libertarians, and the straw polls, Rand Paul won them at this current CPAC, and the previous ones, his father, Ron Paul, won them. So that indicates that on the right, young Republicans are turning to libertarianism. And I suppose on the left, you could look at the Occupy movement too. But they're both disgusted with politics for radically different reasons. The young on the left are disgusted with politics because it's run by money and special interests. But the ones on the right, the libertarians, are disgusted with government because they think that's the problem, as though living in a world controlled by the Koch brothers is going to be a paradise.
I think you're right. I think both sides have a certain critique of government, which, you know, we saw some of that in the 1960s, meaning the right rejected government for anti-government reasons, a rejection of the idea that government could do anything for the public good, an idea that markets were better. That's what the young right of the 1960s believed, and they fueled a conservative movement. And many on the left felt the same way for very different reasons. They believed that government was ultimately corrupt. It was dominated by big interest groups. And it led to an era where government has been on the defense for many decades. And there is some of that now. But it is interesting to see with some of these younger Republicans how they're not driven by these social and cultural issues at all. And they're almost trying to find some more pure form of conservatism, a dismissal of government and centralization altogether. I don't know how they'll do. The party elders still have a lot of power, but I think the party faces a tension.
So, Julian Zelizer, given what's happening with the burden of debt and the decreasing job prospects, particularly for Generation Y, what do you think in terms of political activism? Because there's a movement now called Money Out, Voters In, which was sort of in many ways was inspired by the Occupy movement. But their attitude was basically a plague on all your houses, you know, both on the Democratic and the Republican side. They've given up on electoral politics. Is there a way you think that electoral politics could be revived in the way, for example, that the Vietnam anti-war movement was a powerful political force? Of course, it went away when Nixon ended the war. But nevertheless, we've seen that before, and there you are at Princeton. So is your campus at some point or other in the near future likely to be inflamed?
Well, I don't know if it'll be inflamed, but I certainly hope that students don't simply remain disengaged from politics. I did have one very smart, talented student who came wanting to enter into politics, but the more he learned, decided there must be better ways to solve problems, because what he saw was that Washington wasn't working. But what you're saying is also true, in that there's all these fundamental problems out there, public problems that these two generations face, many of which revolve around economics, which I think offer the potential for politicians to make proposals, to put out big ideas about everything ranging from education to job retraining, that would really resonate for these younger Americans who are worried about their futures, and the older ones, Gen X, are worried about their families. So there's space to engage them, but I think it's going to take some politicians who are clever and innovative and some kinds of reforms of our political processes to really do this.
Well, but wouldn't it be better if the politicians came from the ranks of these young people as opposed to the older generation who are part of the problem pandering to them?
No, absolutely. And they will. I mean, Generation X is just in their early 40s, and this is the time, that's the age when you see people enter into politics. Many of them have started with their careers, and they're right at the moment when they can make the switch to the electoral arena. So that's what's going to happen now. Now they're making themselves known through public opinion, as voters, even as the leaders of interest groups and movements. But now this will be the generation of people running for the White House, running for Congress, and it will be interesting to see if they can translate some of these new ideas and this new generational approach to the political sphere.
So is it possible that we will have a kind of hybrid of social liberals and fiscal conservatives?
That's what some people say, you know, this will produce, and that would be a recipe that would work for the GOP. But I do think that does reflect certainly where a lot of younger Republicans are. They can still be attracted on issues like cutting spending or trying to make government efficient, but they want to leave alone some of these cultural issues that have been so central since the culture wars of the 1980s. So the party, you know, needs to listen if they want to remain relevant. The Democrats have done a better job already, not perfect by any means, but certainly Obama has done something to try to reach this generation, which he's really almost part of, the Generation Xers.
But does this generation need a leader?
They don't need a leader. I don't think you need one voice to crystallize everything this represents. I think they need politics to change. I mean, the most basic thing in how parties try to reach voters, it has to really start taking place through new mechanisms, not TV, not newspapers or even radio, but new forms of media from the internet to the devices of smartphones. I think, you know, it takes much more than one person to really reach an entire generation of voters.
But given that the Gen X generation saw the dot-com bubble burst and the Gen Y people saw the financial crisis, which has impacted them directly, are they likely to be economic orthodoxes? And you know, we've got this ridiculous sky-is-falling deficit argument that's going on now that makes no sense.
I don't think there will. I don't know what the orthodoxies will be. I think some of the old economic arguments, including this obsession with deficit reduction, short-term deficit reduction, might actually fall away. Even on that issue, you know, this generation, deficits are pretty common, and they've seen good times and bad times economically when the government's running deficits. So I'm not sure the 50s and 40s will care most about that issue.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Julian Zelizer.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Julian Zelizer, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's a regular contributor to CNN.com and Politico and has written for The New York Times, The Washington Post, and most recently his books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest, Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, Generation X and Y Start to Rule Politics. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Donald Gregg, who argues for peace and peace talks with the North Koreans, not bluster and B-2 bombers.
This is where what is, and you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? You hand in your ticket